Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi guys, DJ here. Just to let you know, the audio on this podcast, for the first couple of minutes, there's a humming noise that I think is actually the filter and the fan on my laptop. So I'm trying to figure out how to get that out, but didn't manage to get it out for this one. And then the reason that's there is because we started recording off the Zoom app late. Then there's a humming noise comes in halfway through the Zoom conversation, that audio file that we tried to reduce down as much as possible and make it bearable, but we're not sound engineers and we're not tech whizzes, so a good bit of work went into just trying to make this listenable. Hope you enjoy it. Apologies that the audio fidelity isn't up to standard, but it's still a great chat, and enjoy the podcast. And just a shout out to David and Kim, our two latest patrons on Patreon, so thanks a million for signing up, guys. We're really glad that you like what we're doing, and hope everyone's staying safe and enjoying a couple of casual cans of home. Berbua. Right, so hi everyone, and welcome to the Self-Isolating. For this week's podcast, myself, DJ, and Owen are joined by two special guests this week. We've got Peter Breen from the Portleash Pub Club, and we've got Tommy Kyrie from RJ Kyrie's Auction House, and also Tommy, who has just released the Irish Design Podcast. Guys, welcome to the Self-Isolating, and welcome to Snowcast.
Cheers, thanks for having me. Cheers.
No bother at all. And, no bother, Pete. Thanks, dude. You're welcome, Owen. You're welcome. Good that we got this sorted technologically before you came on, but fair play, Joe. I wouldn't have the technological capabilities to do that. Brilliant. I suppose, first of all, Peter, Portleash Pub Club. Do you want to give the listeners and viewers just a bit of background information into how the pub club came about and what the pub club is all about, really?
Yeah, it's essentially a social group that meets in the pub. That's the one sentence description. The idea is I just set up nights out. Anybody can come along. You can kind of stay as long as you want. You know, it's not about getting pissed or whatever. You can come and go as you please. You can drink what you want. And it's just about meeting new people. I suppose just a kind of an appreciation of Irish pubs to it as well. You know, I think they're a credit to the country. We have some real gems of pubs in this country, and I suppose people haven't gone to the pub as much.
Exactly.
recent years across this country don't go that much for various reasons. I think it's a shame at least some years across this about that. I suppose as well from a personal point of view, like just with having kids and everything like that, I haven't really, I might have gone to the pub a lot in my 20s, but not so much these days, so I kind of wanted an excuse to get back out, I suppose.
How is Fifi these days?
Fifi's doing good. Yeah.
She's getting a statue.
Is there enough brass left? Peter, like I've attended the pub club. I've only managed to make. I think it's one of them really difficult things. Like I really admire what you're trying to do. Like I've attended a pub club once, simply from availability as opposed to anything else. And we went to Cavanaugh's in Portlaoise and had a really good night and drank some really good Laois beer when we were there. Like I think I was drinking 12 Acres that night, and you were drinking Ballyhale if I remember. So you know, like there was local beer available, and in fairness I think the pub club has evolved into like this blog and kind of social media campaign to promote Irish drink as well, which is really, really good, and obviously ties in really, really well with what we're trying to do with the Snowcast too. So I do think like it's funny the way, and obviously on lockdown you're like, obviously the pubs are closed, which is something that we're going to talk about in a bit more detail later on, but it is really, really interesting that it has evolved, and the blog, you know, you put up the blog post, and I think I've done two blog posts so far, and I have a third one in mind that I'm kind of trying to sketch out at the moment in my head. I don't want to just vomit it down onto the screen and make the balls of it about the very topic we're going to talk about tonight. But it's a brilliant idea, and I think as well Portlaoise actually has some really good pubs, and people don't get to see it that much, which is a shame, but it does have some really, really good pubs.
Yeah, it does. It wouldn't exactly be known for you know, good pubs or whatever. I remember when I first moved here, I went to a night out with some of my friends, and there was like a hen night or something, and in one of the pubs, and we were like,
"Would you go for a hen night? Why would you choose Portlaoise of all places?" But from being here for a few years, I've kind of grown to like it, and there are actually some really good pubs here, which is quite good. So I mean, I do try to. It's not a sort of a requirement or anything like that. To, you know, if you're coming along to the pub club, you can drink whatever you want, and you know, drink Lucozade if you want. But I do try to champion like the local breweries and distilleries and so on as much as I can. I think it's important. I think it's the future, really. Not just because they make better beer, but just they support local jobs and everything else. And it's just variety as well, rather than having just a monopoly of one or two or three breweries in the country. I think it's great that we have, like, what is it, 80 plus now in the country, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
Including distilleries, it's like 200 and stuff, isn't it? Like, so there's a great variety, and like no matter where you are in the country, there's somewhere local producing.
And I'd love to see more pubs like supporting them. I think
it's
a slow progress, but I think we'll hopefully get there.
And I suppose it's something we might touch on in a bit more detail later on about hopefully like maybe pubs will support local a bit more even after we come out of lockdown, and like we support the local pub and the local pub in turn will support local suppliers. Tommy Dane, I suppose you've been on the podcast a few times in the past, but as an Aegis as opposed to like
what you've been doing in the last while, which is obviously heavily involved with Kyrie Auction House in Waterford, and you've started the Irish Design Podcast lately. How's that going?
Yeah, so we just launched the Irish Design Podcast about 2 weeks ago. So yeah, it's been going well. We've been getting great feedback. I suppose the main premise of it, I suppose why I set it up is, I suppose we deal with lots of people on a regular basis that buy at our auctions that are either doing up a house, doing up a restaurant, a pub. And I felt if I interviewed interior, the people that I really admire, interior designers, people doing really cool projects, if we could sit them down and talk them through, I suppose, what they do well, what they do not so well, get tips and tricks for them, I think it can add a lot of value for people. So that is the basis of our podcast. So we sit down every week with Ireland's top interior designers, whether they're doing that as a full-time job or if it's just a pure kind of passion for them.
Brilliant. Yeah, I've listened to the first two now, and like, as someone who has absolutely zero interest in interior design, it's still fascinating to listen how people are growing, how they've grown, like a social media presence, even just where they get inspiration from and ideas from. And then I suppose it ties in really well with the auction house, and I think we've spoken probably off microphone a bit more about, upcycling and repurposing stuff, and even the sustainability of the whole sector.
Because I think that's going to be huge over the next kind of 5 to 10 years, because I suppose antiques are, I suppose, the oldest form of recycling, and it's the oldest recycling in industry as per se. So I think it's got a huge role to play over the coming years. So I think that's kind of a big focus of kind of what we want to touch on as well,
I thought it was very good in the last episode there, where is it Sarah Twigg, is this that her Sarah Twigg Doyle or something?
Yeah.
I thought it was quite interesting to say that she was on about, like, say, the mix of the old and the new and stuff, and that how she was saying that, like, IKEA can be very good for, like, storage solutions and, being able to put a shelf up on the wall or, do all the things. But then you want to have that, like, statement piece, or not even statement piece, but, like, even, like, a solid, like, bookcase or whatever in the corner quite nice. And, like, she was even saying, like, that a lot of, like, staples, like, say, your couch or whatever, like, the more modern couch is more comfortable, and that's what you want in the house. But, like, but, like, to have, like, a antique mirror or something over it that's kind of, contrasting against it. I don't know. I thought, like, again, similar to Aaron, I've just moved into a new house. I am thinking more about these kind of things, really. But, I just thought it was very fascinating. Like, it's really good, really well produced as well. It's way better than this. This yoke.
No, thanks. No, and I think it's just been realistic that, like, not everyone lives in a Victorian mansion or a big Georgian manor. So we all live in small houses these days. So it's about actually being real for what's actually out there. People are living in smaller houses, they're newer houses. And it's not that older stuff is much better than newer stuff. It's just what you can do, how you can mix and match things, I think,
But I think as well, like, even to bring it back to the, like, I suppose, themes and tones along this podcast is, in the auction house, you have pub auctions quite regularly.
Yeah.
And it brings it in, Peter, as well, like, that what gives a lot of pubs their character and their soul is these, like, antique pieces and different bits that you'd see in a pub. Take, for example, between Ballyragget and Portlaoise, say, where you're situated is Bob's Bar and Duro. And, like, Bob's Bar and Duro, for anyone who hasn't been, has, like, a vintage petrol pump outside the door, and then you go in, there's, like, all mad cool stuff all over the place. Like, take our favorite pub in Waterford, Phil Grimes. Like, there are some really cool bits around that pub, and I think antiques give a pub a certain mystique and a certain feel of, like, a lovely rusticness that goes a long way in a pub.
It does, yeah. I think Bob's actually called themselves a museum pub. And it kind of is, like, there's all these different rooms with different kind of themes in them, and it's a fantastic pub if you're ever in Douro. But yeah, I think that's the really great thing about pubs is that they're, and I think it's kind of unique to this country that they're all unique and they're all independent family run, well, not always family run, but quite often family run businesses. And they're all different. So in a world of, you know, chain, you know,
Wetherspoons is the word you're looking for there.
Yeah. Wetherspoons in a word. Yeah. But even like shops and, you know, franchises and all this kind of stuff, everything is the same. There's a lot of sameness and kind of copy and pasting. Every pub in Ireland, well, not necessarily, there are some chains, I guess, but pretty much all of them are different. Yeah. And they're all have evolved in different ways, and some of them are hundreds of years old, and they've kept some of the old relics that, you know, have been there,
yeah,
collected over the years, and it adds a lot of character to it.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the big things. Like, I think that they did a poll with US tourists, and I think was it 4 out of 5 said that one of the main things that they wanted to do in Ireland was visit an Irish pub and go to an Irish trad session, or, you know, so I think they've got a big part to play in our culture, who we are, what we are.
And I think it's, what's the name of them, Fáilte Ireland or whatever, the tourist board, I think they have the pub as the number one tourist attraction in the country. Like, it's recognized as the,
yeah,
it is, I guess, the main thing that people come here to see.
Yeah, because
and it's free as well for them as well. Like,
yeah, they advertise it, like, they
until you get to the bar.
Yeah.
Especially
Temple Bar.
Just don't start. But the pubs contribute like 2.4 billion to the exchequer every year as well. Like, you know, the industry is a huge cash cow as well for the government too, and I think that ties into what we kind of wanted to discuss today, I suppose. Before we get into the nitty-gritty though, Peter, what are you drinking tonight?
Right now I'm on the 12 acres where do I have the bottle here somewhere, pale ale,
a classic.
Classic. I haven't had 12 acres in a while, so I kind of decided to stock up a bit. I've also got the rye IPA coming up next, which I really like too.
Nice.
So that's me.
Just down the road in Collection as well, so a small carbon footprint on those two bottles to get the
exactly. There you go.
Brilliant. Owen, are you still working your way through the lockdown IPA?
No, sorry.
No.
I am on.
Classic.
I actually I got them as a, so for all the listeners out there, it's my 30th birthday on Sunday, so I got them as a 30th birthday present from the crew and work there today, so I was happy enough there, slugging two cans of luncheon.
Brilliant. And I suppose Castaway, like Tom Hanks film, is quite relevant as well for all those people stuck at home on their own in lockdown too.
Yeah, exactly. So, talking to what was the name, Wilson, is it? I'd say there's a few Wilsons that have been created at home there now. I caught Kira there the other day. She was talking to the Hoover, like, so we have one of those robot Hoovers goes around the house, like, so she was like, where are you off to now? All this kind of stuff. Like, you need to get out more.
Plenty of people leaving big handprints on their balls as well. I don't drink at home that much, like, which, you know, and it really ties into this episode. I absolutely love the pub. The pub to me is more than just a pint. It's socializing, and it's the whole essence of going for the pub. So I'm still going through Kildare Blue and lockdown IPA. I know it's on Mirrorview now, so it's backwards, but it's so juicy and delicious. And I had a couple of cans on Tuesday, and I should be finished then by tonight. And then, of course, I got a delivery today from Beer Cloud, of a big mix box for the Crack Communities virtual beer festival next weekend.
What's Beer Cloud?
Beer Cloud is it's great. It's an online I think it's a Dead Center Brewing run it. It's an online basically an online off license, and you can buy all different off beers from there. And usually I think Beer Cloud and Craft Central and 57 the Headline and these online places mainly deliver to Dublin, but I think they're doing nationwide deliveries at the moment just to sort the poor fellas like us down in the corner of the country that are tucked away. Really, really good. And I think I got 12 different beers there for that next Saturday. So I think we've got a guest lined up for next Friday, so I might have to go easy on that because I've got a box to get through on Saturday. And
but it shows how cooperative like the breweries are in Ireland now.
Yeah.
That, you know, dead center, I mean, they're in Athlone, I suppose they're using their geographical location to kind of gather up whatever many breweries they can, and get them all into one place into their, I've never been there, but I think it's a pretty big facility they have there. So they're obviously, just with the lockdown and everything, they're just using that space to sell beer out of, from even their competitors, really.
Yeah, and what's brilliant as well is actually in the delivery, there's three or four breweries that I haven't had before, because purely from that geographics point of view, they haven't been in the southeast or in Cork, so I've never kind of come across either of them. I've got a couple of these breweries, so I look forward to getting stuck into them next week. And I suppose, Tommy, we won't leave you out. What are you drinking yourself?
Plunged Orange Pale Ale. I think it's from the north. Sorry about that.
It's still Ireland.
Yeah, no, it is. No, not, yeah, and to our Northern Irish watchers and listeners, that's I wouldn't like to be contributing to the Queen.
Plunged Orange isn't the political statement of an IPA, no.
No, I don't know. Who knows? But anyway, it's all right. It's all right. It's strong. It's punchy. But she will rip into it.
Brilliant. And that's great. So we all have a good beer. We're all going to chat about pubs. I suppose there's something that, Peter, definitely you've been putting forth on social media the last couple of days. I've been keeping my eye on it and trying to make up my own mind on what I think is the right thing to do. And I think it's good to just discuss it. None of us have discussed this with each other really yet. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out. But I suppose three or four days, over the last week, basically Simon Harris, the Minister for Health in Ireland, basically said that he thought pubs might not open again until a vaccine was available, and 2021 was the earliest. Since then, the Taoiseach, Ireland's Prime Minister, Leo Varadkar, came out and said that Sweden left its pubs open while lockdown was on, or while they were dealing with COVID, because I think Sweden didn't essentially really go into lockdown. So he's a bit more optimistic. And it's quite interesting when you look at it. As an industry, it's been decimated, really, I suppose, the pub sector. Donal O'Keefe of the Irish Vintners Association said that, you know, keeping the pubs closed until 2021 would be a nightmare scenario. But in fairness to him, like, he wasn't purely playing the corporate game either. He did say, like, no matter what happens, the Vintners will support measures that is in the best interest of public health, no matter what. So he did have the nightmare scenario. I'll comment with that. So I suppose I just wanted to get your thoughts, first of all, on pubs opening, and then there's a few other quotes by economists and stuff like that we might get stuck into as well. But first of all, I suppose, Peter, we'll go to you first and say, what's your take on pubs, when they should be open again, or what, you know, what's your suggestion?
Yeah, it's a really tough one. I think the short answer is it's impossible to know, really. I mean, people's health has to be number one. Well, you know, that has to be the top priority for any decision we make. But at the same time, the way we're going at the moment, it's not sustainable. And that's not, you know, that's not easy. Like, I'd love for the pubs to be open right now. I'd love to be going for a pint tonight. But it's just a simple fact that it's not sustainable. Like, the pubs right now are not paying wages. They're not paying rates to the council. They're not paying rents. They're not paying, or well, probably in most cases, they're not paying rents. I'm not sure about insurance, if they're still paying that. They're not paying like Sky Sports and stuff like that. But, and that's all great. So we can kind of keep tipping along like this. But, you know, it's not sustainable in the future. Like, how much longer can we go without an economy, without destroying it? So I don't think there really is an answer. We can reopen pubs and start introducing, you know, social distancing. That's something that's maybe been floated, which is probably fine for bigger pubs. I did ask some before coming on tonight. I did ask some pubs around Portlaoise and a couple in Limerick, actually, what their thoughts were. There was one actually in Limerick, JJ Bowles, that mentioned that they have a large river terrace. So you know, the social distancing, if they did open, could work for somewhere like that, because they have a bit of space outside, and then your places that have multiple floors and stuff like that. But then, like, the smaller places, you know, I'm just not sure it could be viable. I think most of the pubs that did respond were kind of the same, you know, the Welcome Inn here in Port Leash, it just kind of said it's not really viable for most pubs. Tracy's up here, just outside Port Leash, is a 200-year-old pub, 240-year-old, eighth-generation family business. And they're kind of saying their main bar is just too small. They just can't see it working, really. I suppose it could work, but it would be awkward. You know what I mean? It would kind of feel, if you imagine sitting in a pub and like you have to keep your distance from everybody. And it kind of feels like it might be tense, you know, like it's supposed to be like this sociable place that we go to and we unwind. But if we're all just sort of sitting in the corner to ourselves, I'm not sure how it would work. So yeah, I don't have an answer, I guess. Like it could be, if pubs reopen, if we tell pubs to reopen, and so if some of them say, look, it's just not viable, if I open up, I can't actually make enough money with the social distancing and the size of my pub. I can't make enough money to pay my staff and to pay, you know, the suppliers and so on. What do they do? Like, if they can't open, does the government keep supporting them? And if so, can the government afford to keep supporting them by, you know, not charging rates and not charging whatever, paying the staff the 350 or whatever it is they're being paid at the moment? I don't know. It's a really hard one to call. I think maybe bigger pubs might support it or might be able to do it.
And it's probably from a punter's perspective, you know, you could argue how you could social distance and stuff like that. And there might be those discussions that are being able to had. So the other thing probably is that the smaller pubs are the ones that are most at risk as well and the most most needing support. But I suppose as well, Owen, like for pub staff, I don't know if you worked in a bar in Portugal back in the day, like, you know, it's going to be really difficult for pub staff to social distance from each other using the one till. A lot of the tills are touchscreen, and then like you're pulling a pint of Guinness and there's a bottle of Powers behind you that, and an owl lad's looking for a Powers off another member of bar staff. Like, do you wait until that person's gone? Do you know, bars are narrow. Like, how do you pass? Like, there's a lot of questions to answer there.
Yeah, I think I was actually kind of thinking about this, and I was talking to a few work and stuff today about it. But like, I don't know. Personally, I think that maybe like table service or something like that is going to have to come in, whereby you can't, like, people can't be up at a bar. Like, how do you social distance ordering at a bar? Like, how you're nearly shifting people up at the bars, like, to how close you're and trying to edge in and order stuff. There's no way. So yeah, I think something like table service will have to be a thing that'll have to be implemented in if it is going to open back up. But like, honestly, like, obviously it's way too early to determine how we're going to ease back into things. Like, every day you're kind of getting a little bit of hope, and then they kind of shoot you down. Like Tony Hogan goes, "Nah, lads, don't be getting excited now. May 5th is only a date. Like, don't be getting at anything. Like, if it's going to change anything now, if today was today, like, we wouldn't be easing restrictions. So what's going to happen in a few weeks' time? But like, personally, like, I think that pubs probably should be the last thing to open. Like, you go into a pub with all the will in the world to social distance, and then you get a few jars into you and you're hugging and high-fiving and everything all over them. Like, I think it'd be very, very difficult. And even just like how pubs are laid out as well, like, as you're saying, like, so narrow, like a lot of pubs is really, really narrow. It's going to be a really, really, really difficult time for pubs. I wonder, like, those pubs, like, maybe like the Wander Inn or something, like, who have maybe about 3 customers a night anyway, like, are they the ones that will open back up, like, you know, and have the premises paid off like that, you know, like.
But then again, that's in breach of competition law, that, you know, to allow one book to open and another not to.
I know that.
You're getting into real loopholes there. And I think in fairness, like, the Irish Engineers Association sometimes get put across as like money grabbers and stuff like that on the media. But I have to say, like, their quotes in relation to this have been really, really good. And they have, like, said straight out, a pub is probably the hardest place to enforce self-isolation unless you really limit your number of people you can win. Suppose Tommy is someone who's trying to run a business at the moment, who's trying to fucking do the best by your staff. Now you face different challenges than pubs face. Like, I can imagine as someone trying to run a business, you're very empathetic with the publicans and the owners of small locally owned pubs in Ireland.
Yeah, because I suppose pubs and restaurants and hotels are a big part of our business. People are doing jobs on those premises, so we would totally empathise. It has a massive impact on us. But I suppose from what you were saying, I was actually listening to RT, I think it was the day before last, and they had Charlie Chalk on, you know, who runs a Chalk Group in Dublin. They've lots of bars, and they're obviously asking him, how would you manage it? What I basically got from him is, and I kind of get it, if they do a phased opening, or basically like what we're doing with all the rules, if we go back to normal in a phased manner, it could be more dangerous for bars if they're opening in a phased manner, because if someone does go and they have a shit night, or if they do go and it's a bit awkward or it's a bit tense, they might want to go back for a long time, or they may never go back. They might be like, I'm actually used to sitting at home and just having a few beers at home, I'm saving a few quid, which I'd hate to see because I love the bar and I don't really like drinking at home, you know? So that'd be my one fear about bars when they do open, is if it's going to be very awkward and very hard to do a socially distanced reopening, I'd fear for how viable lots of bars would be. And to be honest, if I had a bar and I was paying back the bank on it, if I borrowed money, I don't know. I'd say there'd be a lot of bars that may not reopen, unfortunately.
Yeah. I think that's something that, like, I suppose the banks need to be smart about as well. Like, they're not going to get these loans repaid if they want to force the issue. Like, and I mean, like, ultimately, like, they need to be a bit smart in the long game as well. Like, they're going to have a lot of bad debts, like, if they do enforce that. But I suppose the other thing as well, Tommy, I was thinking while you were talking there, like, say, you're running the auction room there, like, you know, it's probably you've adapted and changed and gone more online, and you're able to, I suppose, keep separate. And you're a family run business as well, so you're probably all together anyway. Like, you're not mingling with other people, so it's not like you're going to work and there's like an exponentially growing network of people who could intermingle then, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas I suppose with pubs, it's usually one or two people, maybe a handful of people in the smaller pubs. Like, if one person goes down, then all of a sudden, like, who's going to volunteer to work in a bar as things reopen? Like, it's a big challenge.
Yeah, very tricky, I think, yeah. In a bar or a restaurant, if one member of staff goes down and they take down the whole team, it's kind of hard to fathom, really. Do you know what I mean? How could you come back from that?
I think
even there, what you're saying about like having a bad experience in a pub as well, like, it's actually like the busyness of a pub that is nearly the addition of its character. Like, you hate going, you know, when you're in a pub that's empty and like it's just, you know, one or two, like, especially if it's a quite big pub or whatever, like, you know, and you go in and it's empty, like, you don't feel like it's ever going to be a great night. Like, you want the chatter, you want it to be busy. So, like, I wonder, like, well, I feel like that the character and like the atmosphere and everything of a pub will be completely different, and like, will it even be as enjoyable? Like, will it actually be something that, you know, as you're saying, will it be something that people will want to do if they go back and they're like, what the hell is this? This is a kind of this isn't what I want. Like, I want to be in, I want to be busting up against people, I want to be nudging people at the bar, I want to be talking shite when I'm ordering a pint, you know? It's those kind of experiences like that you want from a pub, like, you know. I don't know.
You mentioned earlier on about maybe having a table service, which is, I didn't think of that myself. I think it's probably something that could work, and it probably would have to be what we do. But it just reminded me of, you know, going to like pubs in America, where, you know, you just kind of sit there and you get your, you know, the waiter comes over and you order your drinks, and it's just not the same as it is here.
No, where not at all. No.
You know, it's much more sociable, and yeah, and the Morrissey's pub here, I think his name is Tom from, he has a pub in Abbey Leagues there in Port Leash here as well, in Carlow. He mentioned that he'd be kind of okay with the idea of reopening with strict, you know, social distancing. But he mentioned also as well about maybe reduced opening hours. So I don't know if that's maybe another thing that might be considered, that you only open for certain hours or certain days or whatever.
They could revert back to the Tom Maher's opening hours, where he opens for 2 hours only, and then I think was it an hour and a, or was it 2 hours on, 2 hours off kind of job, was it? I think it was like 4 to 7, yeah.
And then like half and 8 then, until 10 or something, was it? Like it was...
Yeah, something like that, yeah. Maybe Tom knew what he was doing, like.
I think as well.
And ban women.
we don't endorse that. That's the official view of the Irish Design Podcast. That's
Lost all my listenership.
Yeah. I think as well, though, like, it is a really challenging time for pubs now. Like, the other side too, like what Tram at the Busy Pub on a Saturday in the Character, some of my best nights in a pub have been in like Roar Leash in Ballyroan, where Nia is from, and you're there with her dad or her brother-in-law, and there's 8 people in the pub, and it's a big bar, everyone's sitting around the bar, but you could easily enforce social distancing in that setting. But then, like I said, it'll be a bit like anti-competition if you were to try and do that. I do think as well.
Imagine that bar though, Darren. Imagine that bar now, like, right? So I assume all 8 of them are kind of nestled around one kind of bend of the bar or whatever, all chatting shite. You enforce social distancing, and you'll have, did you hear that, Tom? Did you hear what he said, bro?
What's he saying?
Tom doesn't hear half the stuff that's said his next thing. So.
Yeah.
I think as well though, I feel very sorry for the publicans at the moment as well. Like, I was speaking to a guy who runs a restaurant in Waterford yesterday, and I was asking him about how are you getting on and how's the lockdown affecting you, and he was like, basically he's running a restaurant on his own on a 5-item takeaway menu, and he's pretty much like, he's not losing money or making money doing it. He said, like, if he stayed closed, he would be earning nothing but losing nothing. He said he's literally earning enough to keep him going, but he's only doing that to keep himself occupied. And like,
get away from the wife.
Yeah, but publicans don't even have that option, you know. And I do genuinely feel sorry for them. And I think, Peter, sorry.
That's the thing. Like, I mean, right now, like, if a pub is closed, like, the wages are paid, the rates are paid by the government, or not just, you know, they're waived by the government or whatever. And, you know, say Sky Sports is being waived and stuff. But if they reopen, then they make that decision. Like, they have to take on all of that debt, and they have to make that decision, like, can I make enough to pay all of that? But the thing is, if they decide that they can't do that, what happens then?
Mm. Yeah.
Close up for good, or do the government keep supporting them? Or,
well, I think you might actually see, in a perverse way, like, almost the way a handful of property owners did really, really well out of the housing collapse. Like, you could be in a situation where that prick from Wetherspoons owns 60% of the pubs in Ireland in 2 years' time, because he got a load of cheap.
He hoovers them all up.
Because, you know, and he's leasing them or something, you know. And I'd be very, very wary of that. And I do think that the sector really, really, really needs protecting, which actually, you talk about how would you pay for that kind of stuff. A guy, Dr. Alan O'Hearn, an economist, proposed that pubs would add an additional €1 per pint and €10 per meal while capacity was down and they were recovering from this. You guys probably know my political leanings, so straight away I think that puts the burden on the person attending the pub and disincentivizes them, one, from attending because it's going to cost extra. But another thing as well is, like, the banks are still going to get their money, and there's no guarantee that the pubs redistribute that extra money to like paying back staff or whatever. What's your take on potentially there being like a COVID levy when pubs and restaurants reopen to try and balance the books for 2020? Owen, I'll go to you first on that.
Actually, me and Tommy were kind of talking about this last night. I think like if you end up like putting a levy or putting some sort of like additional cost on pints or putting on meals or whatever, you're literally disincentivizing people from returning to those places, and people won't want to go. I think that people will be, you know, people who can afford it when they return to pub will be quite good natured in terms of tipping and, you know, paying that little bit extra. I was saying to you, DJ, that we might do when the pubs go back open, do some sort of promotion of a tenner a pint or something like that kind of thing, just to try and stimulate. Because I don't think people will mind paying it, but like if you're told to pay it, it's people just won't do that. And then in terms of things, I think that the government could do is, like, ban a few, like, just take away some of your taxes, like your tax on alcohol and stuff like that, and try and cut down the price that has been taken off the pubs. Same with VAT and things like that. Like, take that tax away for now. Like, you know, you're getting tax already from like the income from the people working in the pub. Like, just lower the rate of tax for just a period of time. Like, you know, quite a high rate of tax anyway, like, so
yeah. I think one of the counter arguments to that one would be that, like, I suppose like, you know, me and you looking at it from a personal perspective, we're still being paid because we're both working, you know, in the health service, so we're still getting a wage throughout this time. There'd be a lot of people strapped for a lot of cash at the end of all this personally, so even at that, like, if you take like, was there like 500,000 people have been made unemployed over in the case of a month? Like, you take that 500,000 people, at the end of this, they're not going to have an extra tenner. If they have to spend an extra tenner for a meal and an extra euro for on top of it.
I'm talking about that kind of Patreon approach like those who can't afford it and, you know, who want to patronize the pub industry will pay that amount, and who can't afford it will pay it. Whereas those who can't afford it, that's fine. You pay the amount, like, you know.
I'm all for a socialist recovery in the pubs where, like, those who can pay a tenner a pint, pay a tenner a pint, so those who can't pay €3 a pint. That's my utopia when it comes to, like, society. But go on, Tommy, sorry.
I wonder would be a thing for a bar to raise cash or to get them through would be to release some equity in a bar, so you could join a bar, I suppose, they like to have with the football clubs in Germany or on the continent, that if they release 10-15% of the value of the bar or something, as per se, you could buy into that as a means of, I don't know, it just something like that may.
But surely every business is in the same boat here.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
you know, restaurants, cafes, the whole lot. I mean, there's an awful lot of, you know, money that needs to be made up here.
Yeah, but I think as well, I suppose, in the service industry, pubs would be disproportionately affected because, you know, like I was talking to Roman yesterday, he's able to do a takeout menu just to keep the ticket over. Whereas, like, it's very difficult for a pub to do, like even from a health and safety perspective, how do you do door-to-door pints? There might be demand for it. You know, the independent craft brewery industry have really rallied behind each other, like we touched on earlier. And you know, you're able to, now all of a sudden, I don't have to go to Phil Grimes or Grady's Yard to get a pint of Citra or to get a pint of something from 8 Degrees. I can buy it off Beer Cloud or something like that now. So it's that, I can't ring up Phil Grimes and ask for a pint get it delivered to my home. And then but then it's almost greater than 2 kilometers now. I deem it an essential journey. But, like, you know, they're disproportionately affected. Like, the really good businessmen and creative businessmen and businesswomen, who are running cafes, restaurants, are finding creative ways to keep a bit of cash flow going. Obviously, they're probably still in deficit, but that option just isn't there for the publican.
Yeah, you don't see it happening. I've seen some English pubs doing it because, you know, obviously in England, cask ale is still a big thing over there. And, you know, I've seen some, you know, from whatever few I follow on Twitter or whatever, doing takeaway services because it's always better from, you know, the cask or whatever rather than buying it from the bottle. But, I mean, they can't be making a huge amount from that, really. Like the pub, it is like Owen said earlier, it's the last one that's going to open. And I can't disagree with that, like really, because it's, and restaurants wouldn't be far behind, I suppose, but at least with restaurants, you have the tables and people are sat, you know, a certain distance away from each other, and you can skip every second table or something like that. But pubs are much more.
Yeah, you're timed bookings, everything like for restaurants, like, you know, you're.
Yeah.
You
just all around control. Is the toughest, yeah.
And it's the staff, really, like we said, you know, you'd feel for staff if they're uneasy, but I suppose that you're always going to get people that are going to want to work, so, so be it.
I'm going to shock you, lads. I'm going to give Leo Varadkar a bit of credit.
Oh. Feeling all right there?
Is this recording?
Isolation is getting to me.
Is he listening?
In fairness to Leo, like, he very rarely gets it right. He did say, like, any increase in prices from a pub or a restaurant would not be government-led. He did say that much. Now, Owen, you made arguments to say it might not go far enough, but I really do think that there is a shift in society. I hope it lasts, and I hope in a pub and restaurant scene it lasts. Like, you know, I do hope there is that kind of let's all win together, because I do not want Phil Grimes or Grady's Yard or Cully's, J.K. Welch's, any of these great Waterford pubs. Tom Mars, that Sarah Jane Hansen at the Parlor Tea Rooms is just taking over. Like, I do not want any of those closing because I really want to go in and enjoy them ASAP. It's so difficult. I think you were spot on, Peter, at the start when you said, like, there is no right answer. And I think you're right on and probably there saying that, like, it's the last place that probably should open because, like, the pubs have said it themselves. It's just not feasible to enforce social isolation, and even if you try, it's not like it's one of these things that you could theorize about it and put down on papers ways that it could work, but in the real world and in practical sense, it's never going to work, is it? Like,
yeah, like the €1 charge. I mean, I'd happily pay an extra euro right now. To have a pint in a pub, but how many of these pubs responded to me? There's about half a dozen of them, and it was universal. None of them agreed to putting an extra pound on the pint or whatever. Like, I think
put a bigger tip jar on.
That could work. Yeah,
but I think the challenge is the rent, the fees, the license fees. I think, You tipped on like government with VAT and stuff. I think like the economic challenges are going to be strife that it's going to be very hard for the government to relent any tax that's currently being paid. But at the same time too, there's absolutely huge amounts of PRSI that's not being paid through bogus self-employment, and there's loads of corporations using loads of loopholes not to pay huge amounts of tax. Like, if you genuinely had some proper fucking regulation of the tax market with corporations, you could easily offset a lot of the suggestions that you made earlier on. Like, I mean, if couriers and construction workers were not deemed self-employees and were allowed by the welfare board and were allowed to actually get employee contracts, and their employers had to pay PRSI on those contracts, that's a fortune that's sitting there untapped and being abused. And I think if you were able to tap into that and use it, not just for pubs, like, but for, you know, increasing the bed capacity in ICUs and hospitals, et cetera, et cetera. I think, like, society needs to make this, like, really progressive change so that it isn't, like, you have to charge an extra euro for a pint now for someone to get a pint, and the person who's being charged doesn't have that extra euro to pay for X, Y, and Z. There's a huge, huge change needed, at the end of this pandemic if we want to continue enjoying pubs and restaurants. And
but again, that the only fear is, and they're saying that obviously this, that they've only touched on, I suppose, that we, like, this is going to cost us all a fortune as a country. And does it give way for, I suppose, any future government, I suppose, the excuse for a long period of austerity? Or, do you know, it's always a good excuse to enforce austerity on the common man or the common pub or the common restaurant, you know, in 2 years' time, in 3 years' time. So it may be all rosy, well, not rosy, but we may get back to a level in a year's time, but you just got to fear down the line, you know.
Yeah, I think austerity, I don't know what Owen and Peter think about this, but austerity is the easy and lazy excuse for a politician, I think.
Yeah.
And I think what we should all be doing as individuals now is challenging our politicians to find a non-austerity way out of this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think as well, like, the European Central Bank are offering rates to governments to borrow of minus 0.75% at the moment. So, it actually makes sense to borrow money at the moment you'll make money borrowing money at the moment from the European Central Bank. So, like, it's bullshit as well to say that this is going to cost the government money. Like, it, you know, I think for their estimates for, paying the 70% on people's wages and paying the €350 charge for everyone as well is going to cost something like €3 billion. Whereas, like, Ireland's GDP every year is €300 billion. So you're talking like 1% of GDP that's being spent on this. Like, so it's not actually huge amounts of money. Like, they're, you know, like, considering like the children's hospital is like €3 billion, like, it's not actually going to cost like a significant amount of money. Like, once it's the reestablishment of the economy that's the real issue. Like, that's,
yeah,
you know, the government can't afford to actually sustain us for the time being, and there has been like measures put in place for us to sustain this. Like, you know, it's not as if like the last recession happened and we were like, forget about that. We'll never prepare for something like that again. Like, there is actually measures in place, and the European Central Bank has prepared wholeheartedly for it as well, and has that kind of thing as well. You know, there's like, you know, you can print money as well. Like, you know, that like will actually stimulate the economy, and, you know, it can be done in a controlled measure. So it's a bullshit thing to say that it's not affordable. Like, you know, when you're balancing the books year on out and stuff, year in, year out, like, yes, you have control measures there, but like, when there's a pandemic like this, like, money can be created. So I think, like, it's very kind of narrow-minded to actually look at the economy in a, like, oh, we had X amount to spend this year and now we're running way over. Like, it is different. Like, I know economists now, like, but from what I do know, it's not as if we have fucking, you know, a couple of billion in the bank, and if we run out of that money, we're fucked. Like, you know, it's a bit different to that. Like, you know, so I don't think austerity measures will come in. Like, yes, there might be less spending on capital or something like that in a few years, like, but, you know, there is means of just changing around our government system. Like,
yeah, and like, one thing that was definitely something from the pubs that I messaged was that instead of increasing the charges, it was they constantly say, why not reduce the excise duty? We have one of the highest excise duties in Europe.
Yeah,
the VAT rate, I think, was increased from, I think, was it 13% or something in the hospitality industry up to 23%. I know, DJ, you're kind of saying like that's not, you know, it's not sustainable either, like, reducing taxes that much. But maybe
the advocate, man, I think you should be cutting excise duty and fucking.
I'd love to see it. Yeah,
and I think you should be going after the fucking big boys who are absolutely raping us for the amount of income tax they pay, like the likes of Facebook and Google and Apple, who pay 0.2% tax on their profits. fuck that, make them pay. Like, if Jeff Bezos is making billions and billions of dollars every fucking week, then why should the rest of the world have to fucking pay for...
And here we are discussing
that we didn't fucking make it, you know. And why should Yellow Belly Bear or Kildare Brewing Company or 12 Acres or any of these guys go to the wall? Why should the Welcome Inn in Waterford or Laois go to the wall when there's enough money in the world to pay for all this? Like, that's, you know, and I know I get shit at times for being a socialist, but like, at the end of the day, there's enough money in the world so that everyone can get through this without suffering. And if there was political will, it would work. The money is there. Like, I mean, the money is there.
But it's a political issue.
Yeah, it is. And at the end of the day, if our politicians care about our heritage, culture, pubs are part of that. A lot of the trad music scene, a lot of the Irish speaking scene outside of Gaeltacht are dependent on pubs to thrive and survive, which is a huge part of a cultural heritage and the draw of tourism, as Tommy touched on earlier. In order for that to continue, you need the pubs to survive, and the pubs need to maintain their character, maintain local ownership to keep that character. We can't have fucking 20,000 Wetherspoons in Ireland and nothing else. Otherwise we just become fucking, you know, such token shit city.
But we can kind of keep saying like what should happen, but like you're saying, like, it's whether it actually happens. Like Mother Max down in Limerick mentioned that the government have an anti-pub bias even before all this happened, and it's hard to disagree with that. And like, if you try to introduce, you know, reduced excise duties and VAT and stuff, you're going to get a lot of resistance from, you know, the whatever you might call them, the temperance groups, you know, the anti-alcohol groups, because if you start making alcohol cheaper, a lot of people will get angry, and the government are not necessarily going to want to touch that. So that's an issue as well.
Yeah, but I think if you're on the opposite side to the Iona Institute at the moment, you're winning. So let's wrap it up on a much more positive note. I'm going to go around and ask, right, give me one point that you really loved in 2019, where it was and what the point was, and give me one point that you can't wait to in 2020, or hopefully not 2021, where and what.
Say that question again. What was the first bit?
So give me a point that when I say what was a great point from 2019, where and what was it? What comes to mind? And then what are you really looking forward to when the pubs reopen? So Owen, I'll go to you first there.
A point that I really, really liked in 2019. I don't know. I think, I'll tell you now. So I really enjoyed, it has to be Phil Grimes anyway, pub, like, right? But there was that period there where... Was it 8 Degrees Brewing Company that were doing all those six balls, five balls, or the orange ball? Sorry, orange ball, green ball, yellow ball, all those.
The rack
'em up. Yeah.
Yeah, those. I can't tell you which one or anything of it. Actually, I think it could have been the orange ball. That was pretty tasty. All right. I think it was that whole experience of going in and like seeing the new label up. And you know, Tom gives a taste of that there now. Well, knowing too well, I was gonna fucking plug the thing anyway, like, you know, but I'll have a little taste of that now. I'll see if I fancy that one. But all of those were actually so delicious.
The first day that we had the orange ball, we went into Phil Grimes like straight away after work. We went straight into Phil Grimes, me and you, sat in the high stool, we're the only two in there. Tom wasn't even there, like, we were on our own looking around for a couple of minutes. Came down and we were like, what have you new? And he started going on about the orange ball and gave us a taste. We both got a pint, and I said a pint's in the last 2 minutes, like, it was that good.
We finished the keg there that night.
Oh, like, we literally, we had 7 or 8 pints.
I think it was gone.
Fell home, like, brilliant. You know, it's
yeah.
Is there anything you're really, really looking forward to having on draft when this all opens, like something you're really looking forward to?
On draft, I think maybe Castaway again. Like, I'm having it out of the can there tonight, and it's nice, but I think it's just that, like, how fizzy and how sour it is, fresh. It's just magical. I remember I was taking a photo of it there one time, and like, whatever the way the lighting in the pub, like, but you could see all the bubbles just like rising in it perfectly, and there's like this lovely orangey glow from it. God, my mouth is even watering. Even though I'm drinking the thing, and my mouth is even watering thinking of going back to a pub and drinking it. I think that the Castaway passion fruit sour is it's something that I just I don't know, like it's not even the pint as well, like it's just the pub itself, like just the atmosphere in a pub. Well,
you're talking about Grady's for the Castaway.
Yeah, Grady's for the Castaway. Yeah, just like actually, Grady's is just a magical bar. Just I just think that it's the front door of Grady's is amazing. Like walking in with like 20 taps like directly in front of you, and then the bar expands out around it like that. It's the first, like you come in center of the bar. And then, like, all the taps, like, it's so inviting. Like, and all, I think the Yellow Belly, so, like, shout out to Peter for your few, your branding competitions and stuff on Twitter and stuff. But Yellow Belly, like that branding, like, all the taps with, all the artwork and stuff on them is just so inviting to... You're like, oh, what do they have, like, you know, and tell us a little story of all of them. So yeah, I think it's that, right? It's that more than the pints, really. Like it's going, like having that atmosphere.
Anticipation as well when you walk in somewhere like that, like Grady's or Phil Grimes, where there's or Tully's, where there's rotation taps, and if you haven't been in 2 or 3 weeks, and you're like, oh, I wonder what they have, like that just. That like fucking Christmas, child of Christmas giddiness as well. Tommy, what your favorite pint from last year that sticks in your
mind? It was a pint of Guinness, but Peter might like this one. It was the Friday before Christmas, and Owen was with me. We were in Port Leash, and we walked into Kavanagh's, and we were up there for a gig. And I remember just the whole buzz of the place. It was the Friday before Christmas, so everyone was kind of finished work for Christmas. Everyone was out enjoying themselves, chatting, having the crack. And I suppose those are the kind of things you take for granted now that you can't actually do. So that was a fond memory of 2019, you know. And I think 2020, again, it's just literally going for a fucking pint of plane.
Anything.
I'm going to try and spend as much money as possible now once the pubs are back open, in a pub, you know, just to...
There won't be enough bacon fries to fucking serve.
No, no. I won't have a tongue left. It'll be dry.
Peter, what about yourself? Favourite pint from 2019 that sticks out?
Well, it sounds like I definitely need to get down to Waterford sometime from your descriptions. And your podcast as well gives me...
There's always random right people thirst. End up in the house, but like, we've plenty of rooms, come down.
I'll sleep on the side of the street anywhere, I don't care. the first one that came to my head, well, it was probably around the same time around Christmas last year. Actually, I don't know why I said probably, because it definitely was. It was White Gypsy Yule Ale, they call it. So I think it's kind of Yule as in the Latin, and then the Ale as in the Irish for drink. And it just really hit the spot. Like it was in Kavanagh's, and I was reading. I run a social group, but I was on my own at this time. So the one thing I pick out is the one time I'm sitting on my own in the pub. But I was reading A Christmas Carol, the Dickens book. I don't read very much, but for some reason, I just always read that at Christmas. And I was just sat there at the bar with this really, I don't know, just really Christmassy, malty, kind of spicy kind of drink. I'm not great at describing drink, but it was very Christmassy, and it was lovely. And it just really, really hit the spot. That was the one that jumped out for me for 2019.
Nice memory, yeah.
And a really nice memory, unfortunately. Now,
But it is, it's just all that experience, like the whole thing together, like the being in the pub, it was decorated, it was a good atmosphere, reading a book, you know, having a nice beer. It's just the whole
thing. I think this one is probably, I think everyone as well, like that, like, you know, what you're saying there, Peter, like drinking in a pub on your own, but it's like a pint with a paper and just in the corner, like you can't beat it. Like it's so good. Like I love like, especially if you're waiting for somebody, like, you know, you say like, oh, I meet you at 4 and I'll be in the pub at 3, like, and just that hour just waiting for the person where you have the paper or you're just talking to the barman, trying to just fill that time. Like, but it's just really, I find it really nice. Like,
what happens before is sometimes better than the main event. Like, yeah. It just reminds
me. Showing up.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Like, when I was in my 20s and that, like, just going out locally first, and then, like, you know, we'd always plan to go to Kilkenny or whatever and go to fucking Morrison's and the Left Bank, and what's that one of the ones in Kilkenny?
Billy Burns.
By the river.
Matt the Miller's.
Yeah, places like that. We'd always end up in places like that. But the things that always stick out in my mind is the few pints we had locally, just sitting, you know, around, having a laugh, playing pool, playing cards or whatever. It's just, it's the simple things in life.
And what are you looking for?
I'm welling up here.
What are you looking forward to most, Peter, when the pubs reopen?
Oh, probably. I mean, the 12 acres pale ale, while it's nice in the bottle, it is much better in draft.
Totally classic down here.
Like what Tommy was saying earlier, that the for some reason that kind of nitrogen getting the stout. It's just one of those things that you can't really get at home. Like, you kind of, I mean, I don't really actually. I used to drink Guinness a lot when I was younger, but I don't really drink it that much now. But for some reason, I have a real hankering for because I just can't get it now. Like, well, I suppose I could get it in the cans, I guess, but it's not the same. But I'd love to see, you know, an Irish craft brewery doing. Like a nitrogen stout, nitro stout, something like that would be lovely. Though,
our the Snowcast logo is actually two nitro stouts that ironically aren't actually Irish. They're from Colorado, the Left Hand Brewing Company. Their nitro stout is delicious, and I'd love a pint of that. Now, to be honest, there's two pints from 2019 that really three that really really stick out from 2019. I think my favourite individual pint of 2019 was, I was sitting in Phil Grimes, myself and Owen were recording a podcast. I don't even know if we'd a guest that night, and I was in early. I was getting a spin in from Niamh. She was going somewhere a certain time, so I was in about a half an hour before Owen. And it was maybe late September, early October, but it was quite cold. And I remember getting in the back door, dusting myself down, and I got a pint of 8 degrees Citra Pale Ale. And really, really nice pint. But I sat in Phil Grimes, there's this really low table at the back with a lot of board games and books around it. And I was on my own, and the snug was taken. I like sat down there on my own, and I was basically sitting facing the stove and had a pint in front of me, and the stove was like illuminating the pint. I was on my own. It was nice and quiet. It was just a fucking lovely pint. And there's two other real pints I have to give a shout out to from 2019. One is another a US pint from Founders Brewing in Michigan. It was a night that, again, it's probably more associated with the fucking great night that we had more than anything. Two of my brothers, Ian and Mark, were up from Cork, and we met Owen. We were supposed to meet Owen and Philip Rhines, and when I texted Owen, he was in Grady's Yard on his own having a pint. So coming from the restaurant that we had been in to go to Philip Rhines, we were passing Grady's Yard anyway, and we spotted Owen through the window, and just happened that they had the Green Zebra Goss, which is a German style of brewing that nobody really does much anymore. Yellow Belly did a Goss last year. It's like they did a seaweed one last year. It's like this salty sour kind of style, really, really good. But the Green Zebra, it was like 4.6%. It was a watermelon. There was a watermelon flavored.
Oh, fuck, yeah, I remember. Yeah.
It sounds so wrong, but it was also right, like, you know, it was fucking brilliant. And the other one, the best point I had in 2019 was that, do you remember Owen in Phil Grimes? He only had one keg of it, Tom. And we basically drank the keg in the snug one night. The Dunkel, you're dead right, Peter. The Iinger Carlin Dunkel. That stuff was like, you know, it's the kind of stuff that if you're drizzling it on pancakes, you just end up drinking the bottle yourself before you make the pancakes. Really, really good. So if I could get any of those in a pint when the pubs reopen, I'd be fucking thrilled. absolutely thrilled. Listen, lads, we're going to wrap up the podcast now, probably stop recording in a second, and we're going to have a can together just to chill. I just want to say, before we go, you can follow us on social media, Snugcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, the usual. No one was stupid enough to take those handles. And usually we put out a cry for new patrons on our Patreon at the end of the podcast, but instead of doing that, and also we've actually got two new patrons this week, so I just want to give those two guys a shout out. Thanks a million for joining. But instead of putting a shout out for patrons on Patreon, I just want to say, like I said last week, the Waterford Food Bank and other food banks around Ireland are really struggling at the moment. They're going to have a huge increase on the demands that they usually have, and they're struggling for food at the moment. So if you have an extra 5 or 10 or this week, instead of spending it on something stupid, maybe if you have an extra 5 or 10 at hand, buy a couple of tins of beans or peas or a few boxes of soup or bags of soup for your local food bank. Listen, lads, this has been this week's version of Self-Isolating with the Snugcast, Portlaoise Pub Club, and Tommy Coyrie of the Irish Design Podcast. Thanks a million for tuning in, guys. Say goodbye to the listeners and viewers.
Cheers. Good
luck.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.